Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. Kelly Glover and I have been friends for a decade without ever much talking about race. It just never came up. But then, after we shared our Seek Reality conversation with you late in 2016, I got curious. We began to talk about race a lot. And the result is our book, The Fun of Living Together, We Must Learn to Live Together as Brothers or Perish Together as Fools. That's a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'd never much thought about how bad our racial issues still are, even today, 150 years after legal emancipation. I'm white. What do I know? But as we talked, Kelly opened my eyes. How was it that it took my own family maybe 50 years to go from dirt-poor Danish immigrants to the educated upper middle class, when most black people still languish in poverty 150 years after the Civil War? Why? To me, the answer soon became obvious. America never finished freeing its slaves, so the long tale of slavery remains to this day. Kelly and I are going to talk today about how America screwed things up 150 years ago and then screwed things up again 50 years ago, and why we've got to fix it now or things are going to be still screwed up 150 years from now. If we have time, we'll talk about how we can go about in one generation changing from this ugly situation that we have now to a perfectly colorblind America. It's just going to take one generation if we do it right. But I think we're going to probably won't get to that today, so that we'll save that for another Seek Reality episode. My friend and co-author, Kelly Glover, was educated at elite Howard University, and she has a master's degree from the Eastman School of Music. She teaches music to children as a means of empowerment, and her You Better Sing program is enjoyed in schools nationwide. Welcome, Kelly. I'm so glad you're here with us.
Thank you, Roberta. Glad to be here again.
Kelly and I don't get together enough, unfortunately. We used to be able to get together more, but now we're so busy that it's just as fun to hear your voice. It's been a little while. But I'd like to start by sharing your father's story. Kelly's parents were both descended from sharecroppers. All four of her grandparents were sharecroppers in the Jim Crow South. And she herself is educated and in the upper middle class. The reason is her remarkable father. So please tell his story a little bit. Just tell people who he was and what he did.
Well, my father was born in 1934 in Growing Valley, Louisiana, as you said, to a sharecropper father and mother. And he was raised, just like his brother, to believe that in order to become upwardly mobile, that education was the way to get out of poverty. And so my grandparents sent both of their sons to college. My uncle was also in the military, and he had a master's degree as well. And my father went on to get a Ph.D. He was he started off as a science teacher, and he became a vice principal, then a principal, then he became vice president of a community college, and he is now living a very very nice life on the land that he was born on when he retired from being a community college president in Miami, Florida, and a business owner. He and my mother decided to move back to their southern roots because they moved from there during the Great Migration of the 1940s. My mother was born in Arkansas. They were just like 38 miles away from each other. Didn't know each other back then, but they met in Michigan when they were teenagers. And so they both decided to return to their southern roots And they built a home there, and that's where they are now. And all four of us blood-borne children are college-educated, and my parents also adopted four children as well. I'm the youngest, and they adopted four children as well. Not all of them went to college, but they all had the opportunity to go to college and finish, because my parents truly believe in education, that that is the way to expand your mind and to get ahead in life.
So you're saying that, because I've seen the pictures, it's not just a house, they have sort of a mansion, and you're telling me that was built on the land where his parents were sharecroppers?
Yes, it's built on the land that he was born on. Well, he was actually born across the street, but all of that land there, he owned the 20 acres across the street where he was born. All of my family members on my father's side, we own lots of land in northern Louisiana. So I've sold it, but a lot of my relatives sold it to my father when he was ready to build their dream home there. And so they live on 10 acres. They did have 20 acres, but they ended up selling it to their neighbor across the street. So we still have 10 acres of family land there, and mostly all the people who live on that street are relatives who also own land on that street.
I've asked her to tell the story to make a point. What would have been possible probably for just about anyone who had the gumption to try. What's interesting about this story is that so few descendants of slavery who were living at that time tried. Poverty is still rampant in the Black community, even 150 years after emancipation, to the point where something really has to be done about it. It's not going to get better on its own. But there are people whose stories, like her father's story, are so inspirational. When he was born, they were lynching people in the South. While he was a young man, they were lynching people in the South, and yet he was able to rise. The question is sort of why, what made him different? And I think, Kelly, you said it was because he never allowed himself to feel inferior, right? He never felt shamed by anything. He never let it get him down.
Not saying that he never felt shamed. He did talk about it some in the book about being ashamed of his, my father's very dark skinned. And at one point in his life, he was ashamed of being dark skinned. Colorism is something that still exists with people of color, today, but it's not something that ever held him or my uncle back. Or my mother and her family, for that matter. Everyone, especially then, the Black community was way more together, even though there was segregation. It took a village, and there was more. You had lots of different people raising you, and you had other educators who looked like you, African American educators, who instilled in them a belief that they could get out and become something more. And I think, especially for my father's generation, because of that, because of a global village of everyone raising each other, that you had more upward mobility.
Wait, what's the name of his book? Tell people quickly, and then we need to go to break.
Exodus from the Door of No Return, Dr. Roy G. Phillips.
You can find it on Amazon. I'm telling you, his book is fantastic. It's the story of a man who took what were really very, very poor and primitive roots, and he made himself into an entrepreneur and a mogul. I cannot recommend his book highly enough. Exodus from the Doorway of No Return by Roy G. Phillips. And we're talking with my co-author and dear friend, Kelly Glover. She and I have written a book called The Fun of Living Together, We Must Learn to Live Together as Brothers or Perish Together as Fools. And there is no way you could possibly efficiently understand how clueless I was on the topic of America's racial problems until after she and I finally started talking about it. I'm going to give you some statistics quickly that I think will make you cry. I hate to do that, but that's the only way I can think to sufficiently help you understand how bad things really are. A third of black children to this day live in poverty. Two-thirds of them have no father in the home. They live in single-parent homes. As a result, one in three black men will be in prison at one point during their lives. Either they're in prison now, they're in and out of prison, or they will be in prison before they die. They'll have records. One-third. However, that the comparable statistic, just to give you some perspective, is 5% for white people. More than half of America's homicide victims are black, even though they're only 13% of the population. I mean, this, and I should just finish that by saying, look, their killers are black as well. You and I know what's going on. It's kids killing kids in America's cities. This is going on right now. There's no way this is not a problem, and there's no way that it's normal or it's anything we can live with. We can't live with it. And because that's the case, Kelly and I have looked very hard at why it is that things are so bad. And we've come up with what I think is an obvious answer. I'm amazed. I haven't seen that anyone else has ever mentioned it before. Here's the problem. 150 years ago, we never finished emancipation. People were brought here in chains. They were taught that they were inferior, not allowed to learn to read or write. They were not allowed to even aspire to a place in the American system at all. And when there was an argument between one part of the country and another part of the country, two-thirds of this nation overran and destroyed the other third, destroyed it, destroyed the lives of millions of white people who were pretty angry about it, right? And they freed the slaves as part of that, but nobody ever said to the people that were newly freed that they were even people, that they were going to be treated well, that they needed an education. No one ever gave them that education or civics lessons or taught them they had rights. No one ever taught them a trade. They were basically abandoned among the people whose lives had just been destroyed by the Civil War. I don't know what anyone thought would happen, but what actually happened was 100 years of an extension of what amounted to slavery. Call it slavery light, if you will, because the main difference was they didn't have individual owners. If they wanted to leave as Kelly's grandparents left, they could. But they didn't know it was going to be better anywhere else. Let's go back and really think about what it must have been like for those people who were abandoned by the people who were supposedly freed them. Now, how would we have done it right? We would have mentored the newly freed slaves. We would have educated Americans to accept them. We would have given them trades. We would have taught them civics. We would have made them understand they were citizens. Raise your hand. Take the oath of citizenship. We would have done positive things and launched them into freedom. We didn't do that. Nobody did it. No, nobody ever did it. So 100 years later, they were still in slavery. That the Jim Crow South amounted to slavery without papers. And finally, people started to say, you know, enough of this. And the leader, of course, of that movement was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He was a man who also had a PhD. He was superbly educated. But his problem was that he was as much enslaved as had been his ancestors 150 years earlier. And if you don't believe that, read Letter from Birmingham Jail. It'll break your heart. So much about this breaks my heart, partly because I've lived for all my life in the United States and never understood what all of this was going on around us. I mean, you're going to hear subtle things from Kelly later on that maybe won't break your heart so much, but they really are still awful. These conditions are still terrible. But we could think about this. In 1965, we could finally have done the right thing, right? 100 years after emancipation, we could have said, you know, it's time to educate, good educations, teach them civics, teach them how to earn a living, raise your hand, become a citizen. We could have done good things and really empowered the black community 50 years ago. Instead, what did we do? We paid poor women in the United States, and most of the black women at the time were poor, almost all of them were. We paid black women to kick the fathers out of their children's lives. It's hard to understand why anyone ever thought that was a good idea, but almost all of America's problems today domestically stem directly from that notion that somehow that was a plan. The war on poverty didn't move the needle on poverty at all. It's cost more in the past 50 years than our entire national debt, and it broke up black families. In 1960, the same percentage of black families as white families were intact by census. 20 years later, 1980, almost all of those families had broken up. So if we wonder why a third of black men are going in and out of prison, if we when it would only be 5% for white men, and if we wonder why, when they're only 13% of the population, more than half of our murder victims are basically black kids, mostly their kids, killing one another. That's what you get when you take the fathers away from their sons. That's what you get. I'm sorry to be angry about this. I'm very angry. I'm trying to live with it now, but it's a new wound for me. I'm sure other people are saying, you know, where have you been, Roberta? You're crazy that you didn't know this before. I didn't know this before. And you're giggling, I know. I didn't know this before, but I know it now, and I'm devoting the rest of my life to trying to fix it. There are ways to fix it. We'll be talking about those, but probably not until a later episode. Now that I've told you the harsh stuff, I'm going to ask Kelly, and we're going to have to go to a break before we can do this, but I'm going to ask Kelly, upper middle class American. It never entered my mind that her life was not exactly like mine. In fact, my grandparents, hers were sharecroppers. Mine were dirt poor Danish farmers, arguably, and her parents were better off than mine. So arguably, she's actually perhaps higher on the status ladder than I am. America didn't invent slavery. Slavery is as old as civilization, perhaps older. The Greeks, the Romans, the Native Americans, South American Indians, all these people all over the world have had people that were sort of held involuntarily and made to work. I mean, it was a standard way for human beings to live. And in most cases, it wasn't as negative, as damaging as it is to this day in the United States. What's the difference? In nearly all of those circumstances, the people who were enslaved looked like the people who held the slaves. So it was relatively easy, if the circumstances of the society changed, for everyone to blend together. The problem is that when they first began to import slaves to this country in the 1600s, they imported people from a place where everyone looked different, from Africa, where slavery has been endemic and still is. And it was easy then for people to look at people with dark skin right from the 1600s on and immediately think slave or, you know, what related to slaves or somehow less. There was a brand of less that was put on people just because of their skin color. And it did mean something, you know, 150, 200 years ago, has not meant anything all this time. But the brand remains. And that's one of the things that we're going to have to fix if we are ever going to fix this problem. As I say, Kelly and I will talk about that in a later episode. But first, what I'd like to do is ask her to explain. I've been clueless. I mean, she's had my jaw dropping so many times when we talked about this stuff. And I'd like her to share with you some of the things she's told me. What's it like to be
black? One of the things I wrote about in the book is my earliest memory of having something really racist happen to me as a child was when I lived in the state of Washington. And I was describing how when I was 6 years old, the school librarian would let one child sit in her special chair and as she read us a story. And I was one of three black children in the entire school. And so I was the only black child in my first grade class. Well, and I was always the only black child in my classes when we lived there. And when it was time for me to sit in her chair, she asked, okay, who hasn't sat in my special chair? And so I raised my hand, the only child who raised their hand. And everyone's looking at me, and she's still not acknowledging me. Finally, she looks at me and says, oh, no one will start all over again. And I was totally confused. Everybody was looking at me like, what's going on? And then she called another child to sit in her chair. And that whole rest of the school year, she just treated me horribly, talked to me horribly. I didn't know what it was. It just made me feel really small, really insignificant, really embarrassed, really ashamed. And I didn't know why. And I didn't know that what she was doing was racist. But it wasn't until I went to, until my senior year at Howard University, when I was hired as a research assistant to work in at the Library of Congress and the Moreland Spingarn Research Center, that I was finally confronted with the fact that, yes, I'm afraid of libraries. And it was because of that librarian treating me so horribly and making me feel so dumb that I felt inferior, and I just steered clear away from libraries. Even after getting hired as a research assistant, I did not want to do it. I did it anyway, but it was so ingrained in my brain that I was dumb. Even though I was a really smart kid, I was in the talented and gifted program. I was later tested as gifted, but that one teacher, especially, she planted that seed, and that happens to so many children, period, but especially African-American children, and especially during that time where schools were being desegregated. Just very small little thick drops of sometimes things not being said but being done, or things being said that there's really covert racism and very in-your-face racism. And it's the really covert stuff that really seeps in like a slow poison that you don't even realize that it's happening until much, much later.
And as Kelly says in our book, The Fun of Living Together, I'm almost 40 years old and I still have to live this way. Every day, the fact that my skin is a particular shade has to be a factor in my life. And I don't blame you for being weary. I would be weary about that too. I mean, it's such a trivial nothing. There's no difference whatsoever between the races. We've proven that now. So why should it matter? Should skin color matter any more than eye color matters? It shouldn't. But because of this long tail of racism, long tail of slavery that still continues, we've got to cut it or it will continue forever. And that's what we'll talk about next time. But because of that, it goes on. And you also told me that Black people are even racist toward one another. This was amazing to me.
Yes. Well, you know what? It's just like I liken it to, okay, so within the Black community and the Latino community and the Asian community, you have what's called colorism, where the darker you are. With African Americans, it stems from slavery. With what were called field Negroes, they were the darker skinned people who worked outside. And then the house Negroes, who were the offspring of the master, they worked inside. That mindset, you still see it in music videos, especially with women. Darker skinned women aren't seen as beautiful because we live in a society where tall, dark, and handsome is it, and you have your fair maiden. So it's not just something with African Americans, but you see it in lots of other societies too, where the people who work outside are the laborers, which means lower class, and the people who work inside are fairer skin, which means a higher class. It just so happens that with African Americans, ours happened because of slavery, where as you look in other cultures, they get that, including Europeans, that working outside is a lower class thing to do. So that mindset mixed in with slavery, it ends up affecting African Americans as well. And you will sometimes see African Americans discriminating against each other based on skin color and hair texture. The more mixed you look, the better you're seen as being, and the more African you look, the worst you are seeing.
Kelly, please explain what a paper bag test is and why they use it.
Okay, so historically, black colleges and black fraternities and some black churches at the turn of the century in the 1920s, 1950s, did what was called a brown paper bag test as a way to critique if someone were worthy enough to get into a black university, a historically black university, or into an upwardly mobile black church or fraternity, where if your skin was darker than a brown paper bag, you couldn't get in. And my alma mater, Howard University, was actually one of those schools. And my choir director at when I was at Howard University actually told me, so by the time I went to Howard, they weren't doing that anymore, of course. But my choir director went during those times where the brown paper bag test was going on, and he actually told me and another dark-skinned girl in a choir that we were lucky, quote-unquote, lucky to get solos, because back in the day, dark-skinned girls like me never would have gotten solos. So if
Isn't
you were dark-skinned back in...
Oh.
Yeah. So if you were darker back then, it's usually because you had money. But for the most part, you only got in if you were lighter skinned. So you have a lot
these
of black alumni at Howard that are lighter skinned.
Kelly, this is a historically black university, but it's really meant to be only a historically beige university. I mean, back then,
yeah, not anymore, but yeah.
Oh my goodness. See, this all flabbergasts me. I'm sorry, it really does. Terry, tell us more about this discrimination within. See, I see this as an artifact of the way they've been treated. This behavior is taught. Let's emphasize, none of this is innate to people, but the broader culture has taught people that these kind of hierarchies make sense and should exist. This is what we have to remove, this mindset. But please go ahead and talk about the blue veins, which is another thing that blew my mind.
So it's basically the same thing. The blue vein societies were created to try to you had to show the through the lightness of your skin your blue veins in order to get into certain schools or certain churches. And so, remember the movie Imitation of Life, where there was a very, very fair-skinned girl who passed because she didn't want to be in the lower class being black, and she passed as white, and she denied her mother? That's exactly what that movie was about. You had black people who were so light that they could pass. Being light gave you a much easier way to navigate through life. So if you didn't pass, staying and intermarrying and having children who were light, especially back then, it made life a little easier for you because you weren't seen as being as black or as lowly or as lower class. It was seen as basically a higher caste. And as I said before, some black people passed. They were so light and their hair was straight enough that they passed and became white people. So, yeah, it's a real thing. And yeah, Hollywood did a movie about it. If you've never seen the movie, look at the movie Imitation of Life. It talks about all of that.
That's what it's about. Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Is it getting better in black society?
Oh, yeah.
Is there less discrimination now?
Yeah, it's not nearly as bad as it used to be. I still see, I still experience it every now and again. I was talking in the book how one of my, a friend of my mother-in-law was chastising me for going out in the sun. I was really cold inside, and I went outside to warm up, And she came outside and saw me and said, girl, as black as you are, get out of that sun. You don't want to get any blacker, do you?
Oh,
and I'm
my.
Like, what? Are you kidding me? And so I had to tell her I'm not ashamed of my dark skin. I was not raised to be ashamed. And she apologized to me, but yeah, so some of that still goes on, and I still hear every once in a while some of my young elementary school and high school students say, girl, you too black, or oh. I'm a red bone. We need to get out in the light. I'm going to look too dark in these pictures. I'm a red bone. I am not black.
And so red bone just
red
means light.
That means
that
light.
They're lighter complected. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, white people need to understand this. I think it gives us perspective. It certainly gives me perspective. But everybody needs to understand that what's going on here harms us all. Mm-hmm. This is not the country that was envisioned by our founders. It's not something that Dr. Martin Luther King pointed out. We hold all men are created equal. They were endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There has never been a day since those words were written with a quill pen when we have lived up to our creed in this country. We have got to start doing it now, because the future that was promised by our founding fathers still awaits us. It's just ahead of us. Once we learn how to live up to our creed, the beautiful fact is we can do it, and we can do it in one generation, and all of us can come together, and white people won't feel guilty around black people, which we shouldn't. None of us ever had slaves. Black people won't feel ashamed around us, and they shouldn't feel ashamed. They've never been slaves. This is a history which we have carried forward primarily because we botched emancipation, and we've never corrected that problem. We're going to have to correct it now, because it will not fix itself on its own. We don't mean to depress you. We want to just tell you how things are, because we are going to change what's going on now, and we're going to build a glorious future for all Americans. And that's going to be soon, hopefully very soon. We have to do it, because it's not going to get better on its own. People tend not to have friends of the opposite race, which I find strange. I mean, I didn't befriend Kelly because of her race. I found her fascinating just because of her ideas. And she was one of the few people I knew who actually wanted to go out to lunch with me. I tend to be overwhelming for most women. It's true. It's true. We had a lot of fun. We laughed a lot at lunch. And she never got tired of me. Most women find me overwhelming, and so they find excuses. But Kelly never has. She's always been willing to go out to lunch. But that's how all of this started for me. I never thought of her as having a story to tell, really, until about 4 or 5 months ago when we started to talk about this, and it was like a whole new reality opened up. All of this has been happening under our noses, everyone, and most of us have no idea. And it's actually getting worse. It's not getting better. It never will get better on its own. But I don't want to leave you feeling sad about that, because there is a way to fix it in one generation. And when you hear what that way is, you're going to slap your forehead and say, of course, we should have done this a long time ago. But we will build that better America that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called us to. He reminded us of our creed and said, it's time. Well, it is time now. He's been dead for almost 50 years. This is the best birthday, death day present we can give him. So, Kelly, tell us what you do. You're a music teacher of children, and you also are an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so I'm currently, I teach part-time in elementary school, but most of my career has been teaching middle school music. But as a result of teaching elementary and middle school music for the past 21 years, I created a company called You Better Sing, which is a compliment. It's not a threat.
And strange, but you explained it to me. So
it teaches sight singing using technology with an interactive game app. So sight singing is the ability to pick up a piece of music and read it and sing it, just like if you were to pick up a book and just start reading it out loud. To just pick up a piece of music and just start singing the music on the page. The interactive game app called You Better Sing teaches you how to do that. And it all started really with a show that I created for our local PBS station called You Better Sing as well. It's a cartoon that has the characters Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do, and other musical characters as well. They're all different colors because I wanted children to see, you know, I didn't want children to say, oh, she's definitely black, she's definitely white, she's definitely this. Though we do have some kids who have, like, human skin tones, but there are some kids who are purple, others that are blue. And it's a very fun, edutaining way to teach kids music theory and sight singing. And it's on Amazon, and it's in a national music education catalog called Music in Motion as well. And the app is on the Apple App Store.
We've had a lot of fun, Kelly and I, during our various lunch excursions, talking about what she was doing and what I was doing. So I've watched this go from the sketches to being something that is being used in schools. That's been fun to watch the evolution of your business. And
yes, thank you for helping me in the early stages. I really appreciate your expertise as a small business lawyer. You really helped me. I appreciate that.
Thank you, dear. Of course, I would want to help you. I certainly didn't help you with singing. Kelly sings beautifully. I cannot sing a note. My sister says I sing sharp, and I'm the only person she's ever known that sings sharp and not flat. So apparently that's a distinction, but not a good one. Kelly, tell people how they can tell everyone how they can reach you.
You can go to my website, which is youbettersing.org, and that's spelled with the letter U. That's the letter UBETTERSING.org. And you can also find me, as I said before, on Amazon. If you type in the letter U and then space better, then space sing. And if you have an iPhone or an iPad, you can also find me at the letter U, space better, space sing, and you can find the interactive game app. You can also write to me. You can write to me as well. If you go to my website, you will see how to do all of that, of how to get in touch with me.
And she will answer your emails, as you know I do as well. And our book is The Fun of Living Together. And we wrote it just in a sort of fury of desire and need to say something about all of this. But it's actually quite an uplifting book. I mean, it talks about what's wrong and how we got here, but then it imagines the better world that we can live in. And frankly, I'm living in that world now. I just want to help everyone else see what we can see, and then that better world can begin. You would be amazed how different this country will be when we are one people, when race is no more. That's our goal. Kelly, I'm so glad you were here again. We're going to have to do this again in a few weeks, and we will. We'll find time for that. And when we get together again, she and I are going to talk about what the steps are and how we all together can end our racial problems in one generation. I don't want one more little boy to grow up to be on the streets, to be murdered, or to be a murderer. And that's, frankly, what's very likely to happen to those little boys unless we change things. So if there's no other reason to do this, we've got to, for the children, for all the children, black and white, we've got to make this better America finally come to be. And that's what we're going to work on. But we're going to make sure it's fun. Because if it's not fun, frankly, why should we do anything? This is the time for us to come together, and we will. You'd be surprised what a difference it's going to make, and we're excited about it. We can't wait to get started. Kelly, I'm so glad you were here today. Thank you for joining me again. We'll try to have lunch next week because we have a lot to catch up on. Meanwhile, thanks for being here, sweetie, and we'll get in touch really soon. In fact, probably tomorrow we ought to chat. So, everyone, please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end. And when you really understand everything that means, all the implications of that glorious truth, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest will be Mark Pitstick. Mark is a zealous seeker in the study of death. He sort of devotes his life to it. Well, most of us like have day jobs. Mark is into this completely. And he's actually an expert in several areas right now. What he's doing is assisting Dr. Gary Schwartz with his soul phone research. And he's going to be a presenter at the AREI Symposium in Scottsdale in September of 2017. Go to afterlifeinstitute.org for more information. So please join us next week. You're going to find this guy to be very sweet. He sort of whispers sweet nothings to me in his emails. I think he's really a nice guy. So please join us next week. Today, our guest has been my dear friend, Kelly Glover. I think you may have gotten a sense of her as we were talking, but Kelly is a wonderful human being. She's funny. She's wise. She's intuitive. She likes me, which is, you know, really a great recommendation as far as I'm concerned. We've become very good friends. We're blessed to live in Texas, and here the races mingle easily anyway. I've always thought we were really pretty much integrated, and it's only Kelly who has opened my eyes as much as she has. And now I want that dream to come real right now. Now my eyes are open. Now I see, and I'll never be able to close them again. This is where my 50 years of studying the afterlife, the greater reality, the teachings of Jesus, the meaning and purpose of our lives, this is where all of it has led me. Now I find myself on that mountaintop too, where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was long before. And we're looking over now. I really get it now. We can see that promised land. It's real. And it doesn't belong to black people. It belongs to Americans. That's the promised land where all of us live together in peace and harmony and love and joy. It's right there in front of us. We can grasp it. I really get the fact, for the first time in my life, that not a single American can be free and empowered until every one of us is free and empowered. So that's our task, and I love it. Dr. King fought the Jim Crow South to a standstill using only the power of love. He was a very angry man. When you read, you can feel his anger when you read what he wrote. But he never showed it. He never did. He knew that that would be useless. Throwing your fist in the air helps nothing. But the power of love can overcome anything. We've got to come together now and complete his fight for his sake, but even more for the sake of our children and our children's children, all of them. I know you probably think I'm just being an idealist when I say we can fix it and we can fix it in one generation, but I promise you we can. I'm looking forward to being able to share with you what it is we can do and how it's going to work. Our book is The Fun of Living Together. We must learn to live together as brothers or perish together as fools. And there is nothing in this world more powerful than an idea whose time has come. It's time now. We've got to walk together into Dr. King's promised land. If we don't do it, who will? And if not now, when? My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, and now The Fun of Living Together. They're all available from bookstores, on Amazon, as audiobooks, and in 33 languages worldwide. If you want to talk about any of my books or talk about anything else, really, you can always contact me through robertagrimes.com. I answer every email. Recent episodes of Seek Reality are available on boldbravemedia.com. Earlier episodes are on Dream Vision 7 Radio and on the X-Zone Broadcast Network and its affiliates at xzbn.net. We're all over the place now. Earlier episodes are also available as podcasts on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. And, of course, there's that free Seek Reality app. Just go to the iTunes app store and seek and look for it. People love it. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future, in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.